Hi, listeners. It's Carter. Before today's episode of Murder True Crime Stories, I want to tell you about another podcast I am hosting. I know you'll love. Crime House and A&E are teaming up on the podcast version of the famous true crime series, The First 48. Each week, I'll take you inside a landmark homicide case. The interrogations, the dead ends, and the breakthroughs in the critical first 48 hours. Listen to and follow The First 48 every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, listeners. It's Carter. I have something exciting to share with you today. Crime House and A&E are teaming up for the official podcast version of the famous true crime series, The First 48, and I am hosting it. Each week, I'll take you inside the critical first 48 hours of a homicide case, the interrogations, the dead ends, and the breakthroughs that crack a case wide open. Real detectives, real cases, real stakes. I've got an episode of the show for you to listen to now. If you like what you hear and want more, make sure to follow The First 48 on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts. There is also a link to the show in this episode's description. This is Crime House. There's a large grassy field behind a gas station in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Around its overgrown edges, unhoused people find shelter from the elements. Georgette Lake is one of those people, and so is her husband, Mark, aka Smalls. She reflects on what brought them to this place.
We're right to the entrance of the field. Over the years we've been together, me and Smalls always end up back over in this area. He was an amazing man. Think you can ever find a man that would make you just come out here to this and be like, okay, babe, I love you. I'm happy and comfortable. This is my home.
But while the field gives them a place to stay, it's also full of danger.
Feels like this place just devours everything that touches it. And he knew it was coming. He'd tell me a week before that something was about to change, something's about to happen. Out here is where I lost my best friend, my heart. I lost my whole world.
For homicide detectives, their chance of solving a murder is cut in half if they don't get a lead within the first 48 hours. Welcome to The First 48, presented by A&E Global Media, ITV America, and Crime House Studios. Adapted from the hit TV show, every episode features a high-stakes homicide investigation in the critical hours that define it. Today's episode brings us to Tulsa, Oklahoma. When an unhoused man is shot dead near his shelter, homicide detectives have to work fast to solve the case before his killers disappear. With little evidence and only a couple of witnesses, it's a race against the clock, counting up to 48 hours. A note, this program documents actual homicide investigations. Criminal charges are often dropped or reduced, and all suspects covered on this podcast are presumed innocent unless proven guilty. In some episodes, certain details have been changed to protect the identities of witnesses or the integrity of the investigation. Listener discretion is advised. This case is called The Dark Trail. If you've ever tried to find a psychiatrist, you know how frustrating it is to hear that there's a 6-month waiting list or that they don't take your insurance. It can make managing your mental health feel completely overwhelming. But Talkiatry is changing that. Talkiatry is a full-service virtual psychiatry practice that helps you skip the long wait times and get real medical care in just a few days. Unlike regular talk therapy, Talkiatry focuses on specialized psychiatric care. Their licensed clinicians take the time to truly understand your needs, offering professional diagnoses and ongoing medication management for conditions like ADHD, anxiety, depression, and more. You get a personalized treatment plan and see the same provider every time, so you can actually measure your progress. Plus, Talkiatry accepts major insurers, making expert clinical care accessible and affordable. Head to talkiatry.com/MTCS to complete the short assessment and get matched with an in-network psychiatrist in just a few minutes. That's talkiatry.com/MTCS.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At 9:15 p.m. on August 29th, 2020, a 911 dispatcher in Tulsa, Oklahoma, receives a call.
911, GD, police, fire, medical. Please, direct me behind me. I heard the screaming and my dog was barking like crazy. They just fired a gunshot. Did you see it happen or just hear it? I heard it, but I seen the flash from the gunshot. Some woman is screaming, and I went out there to see what was going on. We'll get officers out there.
Officers rushed to the crime scene, a field behind a gas station. When they arrive, the count to 48 hours begins. After the area is cordoned off and the evidence is documented, homicide detective Jason White inspects the scene.
Hey.
Detective White ducks under the police tape and heads down a darkened path, using his flashlight to illuminate the surroundings. After a short walk, he spots the victim. Lying face up on the ground, he suffered a gunshot wound to the chest. The victim's name is Mark Clifford Lake, also known as Smalls. Described as a good-hearted guy, Mark and his wife Georgette called this encampment home while they searched for a permanent place to live. Aside from getting off the streets, Mark wanted to create a stable environment for himself, Georgette, and his three stepchildren. But before he got the chance, someone took Mark's life. And now, it's up to Detective White and his team to solve his murder. Around the crime scene, they find some evidence. Two bicycles, a couple knives, and a backpack. But none of it is conclusive. However, two people witnessed the crime. Mark's wife, Georgette, and one of the camp's other residents, Rowdy Peterson. Detective White asked them to go down to the station so he can talk to them. But before he leaves, he has another idea.
We may have video of these guys at the Quick Trip. We might get video of the actual suspects
potentially
coming down the trail.
We got officers that are working on that right now.
All right. Well, I definitely want that footage. I'm going to start going downtown and start interviewing these people.
It's been 1 hour and 14 minutes. Detective White arrives at the station and begins his questioning. He wants to talk to Rowdy Peterson first. Detective White figures he'll be a little less emotional and can break down what happened.
All right, buddy.
I'm the detective that's handling this case, all right? Where are you living?
On the streets.
Are you kind of standing up there where in that field?
Mm-hmm.
All right, just tell me what happened.
Earlier they asked me if I could stay up for 20 minutes and watch your dog. Because their camp had been getting pilfered and people were still at the...
According to Rowdy, Mark and Georgette had asked him to keep an eye on their things while they went on an errand. Everything was quiet, until it wasn't.
I heard some rustling and bites hit. I thought it was the dogs. And they come out of nowhere with guns.
He says two men approached Mark's tent.
They both had guns. They had to flash out my face. Kept asking me questions about, is he going to come back soon? Who you got with him? Where'd he go? I just know he went to a friend's house in the neighborhood, and now he'd be back. 20 minutes.
Who were they asking for?
For Smalls.
If you recall, Smalls was Mark Lake's nickname.
Smalls sells dope out there in the woods, and they knew it. And yeah, I think they came to rob the guy.
Did you see them shoot tonight?
I did not see them shoot. I heard the gunshots. I took off running.
Did you see those guys over there right before this happened?
Yeah. I see them. They have families off in that neighborhood, not too far away.
Rowdy says he's seen the two men in the area before, and that right before Mark and Georgette came back, he overheard one of the suspects on the phone with a woman. The conversation was heated.
They were very upset that his wife was going to come back with him. For sure, they were going to kill him. They were planning on killing him, and they didn't want to have to kill the wife.
In the end, it seems like they decided to only go after Mark and leave Georgette alone. Sergeant Nathan Schilling asks Rowdy more about the murder itself.
Between the time they pointed the gun at you and Smalls got shot, did you see or hear from Smalls?
I already know. He's like, what the f*** you doing out here? I shot him twice. I jumped up. I took off running, man. I was scared. I thought they were going to kill me. I heard just pop, pop, pop. I heard about 5 shots. I think both of them shot their weapons.
Can you describe them for me? One at a time.
He's Hispanic. He was wearing the tank top and a blue rag on his face.
Okay. Did he have any tattoos?
I don't know.
What about the other guy?
The other guy was dark skin, dark brown. Dark clothing. Blue jeans, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Would you be able to identify either one of these guys?
Yes.
They live up in that neighborhood.
Yeah, they live in that neighborhood. I don't know where.
Even though Rowdy doesn't know where the possible suspects live, he thinks he knows someone who does. Mark's wife, Georgette.
The wife does. She's saying she doesn't. She's going to lie. She's getting sure she's going to want to do something to these guys. She knows who both of them are. She knows where they live. She knows their families.
Good.
Yeah. So hopefully she can do the right thing.
I appreciate you being forthcoming with us. That's a lot of really good information for me to work with, okay?
Yeah.
Before they finish the interview, Rowdy has one more thing to tell Detective White, something that adds an additional heartbreaking element to this case.
Smalls and his wife, 30 years you're trying to get money to get a house. They have 2 weeks to get a house or they lose their kids. They have kids in DHS because they're wavering. It's sad they lost the kids because of drug sales, and they're trying to sell drugs to get a house so they don't lose their kids.
Uh-huh.
Which is, you know, they're doing what they gotta do.
Just 2 hours in.
We've got a pretty decent description.
The team puts out a bolo on the suspects, while White turns to the victim's wife, Georgette.
You know, my heart goes out to you. I know this is life-changing for you. And your kids, how old are your kids?
She says the oldest is 15, then 10 and 11.
So you guys have been together a long time.
He's not the birth father of the kids, but we've been together eight and a half years.
Okay, I gotta be able to get these people off the streets, and that's starting with that, okay? And then we can get you in touch with somebody to try to get you in line to get you in a better position in your life. Does that sound like a pretty good idea?
Georgette agrees to tell Detective White what she knows.
All right, tell me what happened.
My husband talked about our clothes being over at a friend's house.
She says she and Mark, who she calls Baby, rode their bikes over to a friend's house to get their laundry. When they returned to their encampment, they heard their dog barking.
He was like, someone's there. I was like, baby, there's nobody there. So he zoomed in front of me. And then I looked up and two guys come running out from the tent area and Baby's screaming and he like tackles Baby off the bike. And he fell on the ground and starts saying, I'm sorry, bro, no, 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 please. And he pointed, I guess it was a pistol at him. Right, right, right. He looked at me and he pointed right at me. but nothing happened. Then the guys both started running.
Who are these guys?
I don't know. They're just people that were walking down the street. Maybe it always helps everybody.
Georgette said she didn't know who they were, but Detective White remembers what Rowdy said. He still isn't sure if Georgette is telling him everything.
Listen to me. Rowdy seems to think that you're not going to be completely honest with us because he thinks that you're going to want to take care of business on your own. I think you know more than that.
It's been 2 hours and 9 minutes, and Detective White is still searching for a lead. On August 29th, 2020, 32-year-old Mark Clifford Lake was shot dead at his encampment in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Following his death, homicide detective Jason White takes charge of the investigation. So far, he's learned from one witness, a man named Rowdy Peterson, that two men shot Mark. Rowdy knows the two men live somewhere nearby, but he's not sure where. But the witness says that Mark's wife, Georgette, does. Detective White sits down to talk to her, hoping that she'll tell him everything she knows.
Rowdy cares a lot about you, and he cares a lot about your husband. He tells me that you know them pretty well. I need to know who these guys are.
I don't know who the other guy was, where he came from, who he looked like a little miniature knockoff version of AJ, I guess.
Where do they live?
Latimer.
Okay, but you know who AJ is, and AJ was there, period. Yes. Okay. Do you know any more to his name?
No. He just came up from California.
Does he have any tattoos?
A Grim Reaper on his shoulder.
Thankfully, Georgette provided Detective White with 3 pieces of valuable information. One of the suspects is named AJ. He has a tattoo of the Grim Reaper on his shoulder, and he lives off a street called Latimer Place. He passes this information along to Sergeant Nathan Schilling.
Search our database for AJ Latimer. It'll search all our reports and field interviews. And maybe we'll get lucky where someone mentions his nickname. This holds some promise. Andres J. Martinez. So we will find him in Traces. And there we are. And he lists the address in East Latimer Place. So he just got arrested like 3 weeks ago and claims to be homeless.
37-year-old Andres J. Martinez grew up in Riverside County, California. He has no prior convictions. Based on what the investigators have learned so far, Sergeant Schilling thinks this may be the AJ Georgette is referring to. He wants to see if she recognizes him. Sergeant Schilling brings this information to Detective White, who's still in the interrogation room with Georgette. Detective White shows her a photo of Andres Martinez.
Is that him?
Yes. Check his shoulder.
Okay, so this is the guy that's got the Grim Reaper tattoo on his shoulder?
Yeah. The individual you referred to as AJ.
Mm-hmm. We have literally only known him about maybe a week and a half. He's supposed to go get stuff from any store that we choose, anything we want, he's supposed to be able to do it.
Was he getting dope in exchange for bringing you guys stuff?
Yeah. But he would never show up with the stuff. He would just show up himself. Everything's in the car, everything's in the garage. And they end up arguing, bickering. There's a kit ambush that Vivi took from AJ, made him walk home.
What did he take?
A kit ambush, it's a bike.
She says that AJ was supposed to pay Mark for drugs that he'd been fronted. But when AJ failed to come through, Mark took his bike.
Is that why AJ came back, probably pissed off?
Probably. My husband made him empty his pockets and leave his bike.
Does your husband have a knife?
He has a knife that slides in and out, but I think he left it at the tent when we left. I had my knife on me.
What kind of knife do you have?
I have a switchblade type knife. It's black and silver.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's talk about the second guy. Describe him for me.
I was like a five.
Did you happen to notice any tattoos on the that guy?
No.
Did you get a decent look at him?
No.
But you definitely got a good look at AJ.
Usually someone puts a gun in my face, I try to remember what they were looking like.
If you didn't catch that, she said, usually if someone pulls a gun in my face, I try to remember what the F they were looking like.
All right, sit tight.
Thank you.
Although they still have to identify the second suspect, Detective White has enough to get a warrant for AJ's arrest. But he and Sergeant Schilling aren't sure where to find him. According to a recent incident report, AJ's address on Latimer Place is vacant.
AJ shows to be homeless in our database, so I was trying to figure out his address. On Latimer, on the 10th, a call went in of a burglary at the location. The tenants moved out, so that address is probably not going to be good anymore.
We'll find him.
3 hours in, the case takes a turn. Officer Dylan Myers was patrolling the area around the crime scene when he spotted a man fitting the description of the second suspect, AJ's unnamed friend. Officer Myers pulled him over to talk to him, and he could sense something was off. He tells Detective White about their interaction and why he decided to bring the man in for questioning.
So how did Tattoo Guy come into this situation?
He was like looking around really nervously, so I stopped him. He was like, man, I just came from the Quick Trip over there on Sheridan. He was super nervous.
It's been 2 hours and 44 minutes. Detective White looks up the suspect. 38-year-old Jason Enrique Arce, also known as Loco, is from Compton, California. He has a prior conviction for assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, and he's listed as a known member of the Sereños gang, which originated in Southern California and has spread across the country.
I've had a little contact with the Sereños in a previous case. You have the Mexican Mafia. Below the Mexican Mafia, you're gonna have the Sereños. Here in Tulsa, I know that you're gonna have a variety of different Sereños cliques or sets. For him to be certified as a gang member in the city of Tulsa, that says something right there in and of itself. He's been certified for a reason. He's got a motherload of tattoos on his face. I don't know specifically if there's any significance to those tattoos. It's impressive. It's kind of scary. We don't run across hardcore people like him.
Detective White shows Mark's friend Rowdy a photo of Jason Loco Arce to see if Rowdy recognizes him. He shares the result of that conversation with Sergeant Schilling and another police officer.
I'm thinking tattoo is not going to be, you know, nothing. So I take it into Rowdy. I'm like, hey, dude, do you know this guy? The moment I show him a picture of him, that's him. But he didn't say nothing about any tattoos on this guy's face.
No.
This guy's got freaking tattoos all over the place.
It's been 2 hours and 54 minutes. Detective White decides to show Georgette a photo of Jason Enrique Arce as well.
I want to see what her reaction is going to be when I show her the photo of this guy. You know that guy?
White shows the victim's wife a photo of Jason Arce.
No.
Are you sure?
He kind of looks almost like the guy, the same way his hair was cut. I don't know his face. I mean, everything else about him seems familiar. But it makes sense why I can see how dark his hair was at night.
Now, Georgette says it makes sense why she couldn't see him clearly with how dark it was out there. Detective White decides he needs to talk to Arce himself. From his dealings with other gang members, He knows the way to get respect is to give respect. And then hopefully, Arce will tell Detective White and Sergeant Schilling the truth.
All right, well, first of all, I'm Detective White. This is Sergeant Schilling over here.
You from California?
Yeah.
Where at?
I was born in LA, still there.
You got some serious tattoo work, man. Serious. Here's what I want to talk to you about. So you were over there at the Quick Trip, is that right?
I was just happening to be out there because my girl was picking up, I don't know if it was her cousin or her friend or something.
He says he rode with his girlfriend to the gas station earlier that night.
What kind of car was it?
A white BMW. She got it. And I was drunk, and me and her started arguing. I took her out by the trash cans.
He says after they got in a fight, he stormed out of the car, and she drove off.
There's like a field out right there, like grass and stuff and brush. I went towards that way.
Okay.
Then I fucking came back out, and I called her up. I was back and forth. I was waiting for her. She didn't come back. We were arguing.
So, did you see anybody or see anything go on while you were in that field?
Like a bunch of homeless people.
Did you hear any gunshots?
Gunshots?
Yeah.
He shakes his head, no.
You didn't hear anything like that?
Not when I was there, I didn't hear gunshots.
Well, we had a situation where there was kind of an incident that happened with a homeless person. Not saying you were involved in that in any way, shape, or form, okay? Did you happen to meet up with a friend of yours that was a male, like a homeboy or anything like that over there?
Earlier, I did. Not there, though.
Okay, who would that be?
I call him JR.
How about AJ?
Detective White shows Arce a photo of Andres AJ Martinez. Arce doesn't show any emotion either way.
Like that guy? You know him?
Nah.
You don't know him?
No.
Have you fired a gun today?
Again, Arce shakes his head no.
Perfect. I've got a test that I want to basically rub your hands to tell me whether or not you fired a gun. Is that cool? And
what are you saying? There was a shooting or something? Because you're asking about gunshots.
Yeah, there was a shooting, yeah. When you said you ran into some homeless people back in the back, how far back?
Right there, right where I'm parking out of North Philly.
Did you go down the trail at all?
No. It was dark. No, I didn't go down the trail. It was dark.
Arce says not far, just by the parking lot. He didn't go down the trail to the encampment. It was too dark. And he agrees to take the gunpowder residue test. It will take some time for the results to come back.
Let me see your hand right quick.
So that's what this is all about?
Yeah. So if you don't got nothing to do with it, you got nothing to worry about?
Somebody got hurt or something?
Unfortunately.
Yeah. What's your girlfriend's phone number?
It's on my phone.
Okay. What's her name?
Arce tells Detective White and Sergeant Schilling her name, which we aren't disclosing, but he doesn't want them to call her.
We're going to call your girl. We're going to verify that with her. We'll look at your phone. You've given me your gunshot residue test. That's pretty helpful.
I mean, I really don't think you calling her is going to solve this.
I think it's going to help us out big time.
I feel like harassing her, like at what time you said it was, 12 or whatever. Me and her have already been arguing. And calling her up and bugging her or whatever, or just harassing her over that type of shit.
We just need to call her just to verify your story. Sit tight.
As they exit the interrogation room, Detective White says he has a feeling that Arce is involved. And if he can't find the answer soon, time could be running out. It's been 3 hours and 39 minutes. Detective Jason White is making progress in Mark Lake's murder case. He has one of the two suspects in custody, a man named Jason Enrique Arce. But he also needs to find Arce's suspected accomplice, Andres A.J. Martinez. Sergeant Nathan Schilling agrees, but Arce isn't telling them what they need to know. So Sergeant Schilling calls Arce's girlfriend to try and learn more. Detective White listens in on the call, along with Lieutenant Brandon Watkins.
What is he being fishing for, if you don't mind me asking?
There was a incident that happened over there behind the Quick Trip.
Please don't tell me he's in trouble, because he didn't do nothing, honestly. But I don't know if you were to go take a walk, because we got into that Quick Trip, and that's it.
Was there anyone else with him?
He had a friend with him, but I don't know his friend. Like, I don't get along with his friend. Me and his friend don't get along for shit.
Who's his friend?
I don't know his fucking name. I just know it's not a Mexican fool.
How long was he in the car with you guys?
He didn't stay in the car with me. Whenever we got into it, he freaking left with Jason.
You know that you can get in trouble if you lie to the police to hinder an investigation, correct?
Yes, I understand that, and I'm not lying to you. Me and his friend don't get along.
Did he tell you anything about what happened while you were gone?
I don't even know what the fuck is going on, honestly. And that's the honest to God truth.
Someone was shot tonight. And if you're lying for him...
I'm not lying for him. That's bad.
What's his friend's nickname? Come on, don't play dumb.
Honestly, tell me your fucking dog. Look at his phone for his friend. I don't like his friend. I don't even like him being around that shit. I knew the stupid shit was gonna happen. I knew his friend is involved, but I didn't know they were gonna do something.
So they weren't talking about being mad or looking for somebody?
No, sir, I didn't know shit.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
She's saying just enough to make it sound like she's telling the truth, and she said the word honestly 14 times. She's lying.
Detective White and Sergeant Schilling agree with Lieutenant Watkins.
He's involved, isn't he?
Yeah, he's number two.
Okay, I figured he was.
Yeah, Tim and AJ.
She told us that?
No, but she does say... His friend's in the car. A male friend that she doesn't like, that's nothing but trouble, is in the car with him. They get out and they walk away, and then she leaves.
4 hours after Mark's murder, surveillance video from the gas station comes in. Detective White and Sergeant Schilling take a look at it. The video shows a white BMW pulling into a parking spot. The same car the suspect Jason Arce described. A moment later, a large man in dark clothes, matching AJ's description, gets out of the back seat. After that, Jason Arce gets out of the front passenger seat and follows him. Detective White spots something else in the video, a contradiction from what he's been told. Both Arce and his girlfriend said they were fighting, but in the video, Detective White sees something that brings that into question.
Hang on, go back a little bit real quick. See right there, they just kiss.
That's a little contrary to what he was telling you.
So he said that they had a big fight, but then they just kiss in the car and he's getting out of the car.
8:45, so 18 minutes before the 911 call?
Yeah. He claims that he just went right over into the field and that was it, and then he left. Okay, so let's look at the south view of that.
Like 9:03?
Yeah, probably. The 911 call initially comes in at 9:02.
They check the footage from just a minute or two after the shooting. Two men come running into the frame. They're in the distance, but it looks like Jason Arce and his friend, the man they believe is AJ Martinez.
That's gonna be them. That's gonna be AJ. So they're together. That's huge. Huge video. I guess we could see if AJ's phone number is in his phone.
Using a phone number they have for AJ from a prior report, Sergeant Schilling searches Jason Arce's contacts. He confirms.
AJ's number is in Arce's phone.
All right, that's good. That's good.
And I was looking at his location data, and it puts him at AJ's house on Latimer.
So he was back at the house doing something after he no longer lives there.
That's good.
Now we're cooking.
It feels like they're on the verge of cracking this case. So they return to the interrogation room and confront Jason Arce.
He didn't tell us that there was a guy in the car with you. You said it was a chick, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were in there with a guy that goes by AJ.
Oh, no AJ.
You've got AJ's number in your phone, man. You were lying to me about being with this guy, and it's causing you some problems. You've got three people, AJ, AJ, and AJJ.
I mean, she calls, it's going to be all the national phone.
Well, maybe, but it's the same number that we have for AJ. Andreas Martinez.
It's been 5 hours and 49 minutes.
And then the other problem is the fact that I've got you on video running from that field with the other dude. The information that we've got from the witnesses that were up there at the scene with that you were with this other guy was that you both were shooting, okay? That's what we were told.
This wasn't charged.
Murder.
Are you serious, man?
Yeah, I'm dead serious. These guys are gonna take your clothes.
You think it's a homicide?
It is a homicide. The guy did die. So we're gonna talk to AJ, you know, we're gonna find him and we'll talk to him as well. Best of luck, okay? We're gonna book Jason Arce. These are two violent individuals, so it's gonna be nice to be able to get these people off the street for this victim's wife. In large part, this is because of that alert police officer, Officer Myers, noticing this guy walking down the street. And sure enough, you know, he's one of the two suspects.
So I'm probably gonna be on first 48, huh?
Yeah. The next thing is we're gonna be looking for AJ, who is gonna be Andres Martinez. My hope is that we're gonna be able to locate him relatively quickly.
They decide to arrest Arce for killing Mark Lake, and the search for his accomplice, AJ, is on. Patrol officers scan the neighborhood for AJ and the area around his old address on Latimer Place. Just 13 hours in, AJ is brought down to homicide. Detective White is running on fumes. He talks to the officer who brought AJ in.
All right, tell me what happened this morning.
We drove by Latimer Place. He was asleep in a chair outside the house.
Okay. If he's a man of character, then he's gonna step up for his buddy. And he's gonna tell me what really was going on.
This is the final piece of the puzzle, the key to closing the book on Mark Lake's murder. Detective White conducts the interrogation with Lieutenant Brandon Watkins.
All right, buddy. My name's Jason White. This is Lieutenant Watkins over here next to us. And I'm one of the detectives that's up here, okay? Where were you last night?
Where were you all night?
Do you know a guy that has a street name of Loco?
I heard about him.
Detective White shows AJ pictures of Jason Arce and Jason's girlfriend. AJ doesn't betray much emotion.
Okay. Would it be that guy?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that girl before?
Long time.
Did she happen to give you a ride with her boyfriend? Dropped you off over at the Quick Trip, which has cameras everywhere?
She had another girl with her.
He says she had another girl with her.
Well, here's the problem with that, because we've already talked to her, and she's told us that both you and him were together in the car. And then the two of you guys got out.
I was there with her in the car. And I told him, that's it. So I just walked home.
He claims he was there with her in the car, then he walked home. That's it. All he did was walk home.
There's a guy by the name of Mark Lake. Him and his wife, they live in a tent along the trail from along that Quick Trip, all right?
No, I was there on that trail.
Confirmation, he walks down that trail.
I know. So you know the trail?
No. They don't be the homeless people. They don't walk through and say hi.
Yes, he knows there are unhoused people who stay there, and he says hi to them.
Well, Mark is dead.
I had nothing to do with this situation.
AJ says he had nothing to do with this situation.
Were you around somebody that fired a gun?
I was not there. I'm running home.
But that's you, and that's Loco.
I'm running.
Yeah, he was running.
Okay.
This is called a gunshot residue test. It allows me to basically scrub your hands. Does that sound agreeable to you?
I'm lying. I didn't shoot anybody.
AJ says he doesn't mind because he didn't shoot anyone.
Well, I've got two witnesses that watched you do it.
Detective White is close to finishing this interrogation, and then he can make his final arrest. It's been 13 hours and 44 minutes. Detective Jason White has already arrested one suspect, Jason Enrique Arce, for the death of Mark Lake. Now he's focusing on the second suspect, Andres A.J. Martinez. AJ says he didn't kill somebody. How would he do that?
You pulled out a gun and you shot.
I don't have no gun.
Do you have any tattoos?
Yeah, I have tattoos.
Is one of them a Grim Reaper on the side of your shoulder?
Yes.
Let me see it if you don't mind.
AJ shows him. It's just like Georgette described. AJ tells him he saw Mark riding a bicycle on the trail at some point before the shooting. He says they bumped into each other, but that's it. However, as Mark's wife, Georgette, already told Detective White, it went well beyond that.
So, essentially, there was a situation that happened over there a few days ago where they accused you of stealing something or some weed. Ring a bell?
Yeah, he tried to tell me that when I was walking by, but I didn't know what he was talking about.
He accused you of being a thief. He took your bike. He made you empty your pockets. And he sent you home. Like, get out of here.
I wasn't even worried about that because I know I didn't do anything wrong.
AJ says he wasn't even worried about it. He's not worried because he knows he didn't do anything wrong.
Essentially, that falls into the category for me that he was being disrespectful to you.
I don't know, why would I kill this guy for a bike?
Yeah.
There's no sense in that. I have no guns at all. That's not what I do. I don't kill people.
Detective White isn't buying it. He officially places AJ under arrest.
Okay. Loco got charged with murder, so you're going to get the same thing.
Why don't I get charged with murder for?
The only people that were close to Mark when the gun went off was you and Loco.
Yeah, but I did not do anything. That's what I'm telling you.
If you didn't do it, then who does that leave?
Another person, yes.
Which is who?
I don't know. I can't.
Lieutenant Watkins presses him further on it.
You've got one opportunity to tell the truth, and you're just pissing that away.
Are you scared of Loco?
He's going to be scared of him.
He's a Serenius from East Los Angeles. Are you scared of the man?
No.
The interrogation is over for now. Detective White performs the same gunshot residue test he did on Jason Arce. Now, they just have to wait for the results. He shares his thoughts on how the investigation has unfolded so far.
What I love about this interview that we did is he corroborates basically everything that the victim's wife had talked about. Everything. Up until the part where this happens, which tells me she's telling the truth. She watches this go down. So I don't see that she would have a motivation to basically make up that he did this. He's there. In their world, I think he felt like he got disrespected. And so he probably was telling his buddy about it. And his buddy, you know, being the Serenius gang member that he is, he's like, man, you're going to have to do something about it and prove yourself.
It's been 14 hours and 14 minutes. And this case is closed. The gunshot residue tests came back positive for both men. In the face of all the evidence, Andres A.J. Martinez pleaded guilty to first-degree manslaughter and was sentenced to 40 years in prison. Jason Arce fought the charges and was convicted of first-degree murder. He was sentenced to life in prison. When it was all said and done, Detective White reflected on the tricky nature of this case.
You know, this was a challenging case, straight out of the gate. Just because you're dealing with the homeless population, for starters. Sometimes they're afraid. They're afraid to talk. For her to have the courage to step up, I'm extremely proud of her. And I think that she did the right thing for her husband on his behalf.
Not only did Georgette play a crucial role in solving her husband's murder, she managed to turn her life around after experiencing this horrific tragedy. It's a testament to her resilience and strength, and a powerful way to honor Mark's memory. About a year later, she talked about her journey following her husband's death.
About a week after he had passed, my mom, she was like, well, you can come stay and, you know, whatever you need. And I didn't want to do it. I don't like accepting help from people. But then my son called me on the phone and he's like, Mom, you need to go stay with me. I was like, well, that's just Smalls right there telling me to hurry up and get into a place. So I've stayed over here the last 5-6 months. There's 3 kids all together, and the 2 youngest were taken away. They're just all the way in Missouri. My oldest, she's the one that has seen, you know, our life. She actually came up to me just the other day, and she was like, you know, Mom, Smalls is the only actual father figure I've ever had. It's been different. I've actually gotten out and started working. I'm still trying to readjust to living indoors or living with other people or having to adjust back to being just a respectful, normal person, you know? It's because with Mark, it was living in each other's moment rather than the world. I see his face all the time. And I know that Mark didn't like me being out there at all. All he ever wanted was the best for me, so I'm trying little steps at a time.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The First 48. Join us next week for another high-stakes homicide investigation and the crucial early hours that define it. To learn about how you can help the families of homicide victims, go to www.aetv.com/48resources. Thanks for listening to this episode of The First 48. To hear more, follow The First 48 on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts. There's also a link to the show in this episode's description. Hi, listeners. It's Carter. Before today's episode of Murder True Crime Stories, I want to tell you about another podcast I am hosting. I know you'll love. Crime House and A&E are teaming up on the podcast version of the famous true crime series, The First 48. Each week, I'll take you inside a landmark homicide case. The interrogations, the dead ends, and the breakthroughs in the critical first 48 hours. Listen to and follow The First 48 every Thursday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts.